Hey, come over here, to the right-hand speaker. That's right. Close. Come on, closer. Can you hear me if I whisper in your ear? They're going to play that tune again over there. Still, you shouldn't hear much of it over here. That's what we mean by separation.
Some NPR music. You're connected to All Songs Considered. Good morning, Mr. Hilton.
Good morning, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing well. So today's show is going to be about your parents' record collection, and that little oblique cut will become a little clearer later on as we progress through our little show today. And what we've done is we've asked people.
Yeah, we put a call out. This is part of a feature on that's going to run through this summer on All Things Considered, asking people to share their memories of their parents' record collection. Was there a song or a record or an artist you discovered that shaped your taste in music one way or the other, for better or worse, or maybe a song that you carry around with you?
There were some of those in the back.
Yeah, we've learned so far in some of the early replies that we've gotten that people didn't, of a certain age anyway, didn't really discover a lot of great music in their parents' record collection. I think a lot of people instinctively rebel against their parents' record collection.
That said, we have 100 stories, of which there are a large chunk of them, that actually carried with them something from their parents' record collection that means something today. Or maybe it was something in their parents' record collection that gave them insight to who the heck their parents were, because they may have been a very straight-laced person, but then danced crazily to some music buried deep in that collection, and have a memory of that. So that's the stories we're asking you to tell us on the All Songs Considered blog. But we all have them, right? You've got one.
Yeah, I actually discovered a ton of music from my parents' record collection that they were playing all the time in the house and in the car. That some of it was pretty corny, I think, you know, or some people would call it corny. I made a note on the blog that I listened to a lot of John Denver growing up, which I love, but I know.
And there's an awesome picture of Robin and his family in blue denim, except your dad's the rebel, in blue denim, and then your love for John Denver, who is also in love with blue denim. Was it denim?
It was actually probably a poly blend, polyester. I think my mother got a good deal on a bolt of material and made everybody matching blue polyester jumpsuits. But lots of singer-songwriters, lots of folk singers, lots of classical music, lots of musicals. That's what I heard growing up. And certainly the standout in the bunch would be Simon and Garfunkel. They were huge fans of Simon and Garfunkel. And I even have a memory of in college being home and playing it on the stereo and overhearing my dad in the kitchen saying to my mom, "Can you believe kids are still listening to this? That people are still discovering it." And
now 700 years later,
yeah,
here we
exactly.
are.
Exactly. You know, and that was in the 80s, right? Which now doesn't seem like it had been that long.
Right, but and that music was made 20 years previous.
Yeah, so. I guess so, yeah. Well, they were also huge fans of the movie The Graduate. I think they both thought it was one of the funniest movies of all time. And a lot of Simon and Garfunkel music showed up in that film, including some cuts from their record Sounds of Silence. I want to play April Come She Will.
Oh, good one.
April, come she will, when streams are ripe and swelled with rain. Resting in my arms again. June, she'll change her tune. In restless walk she'll prowl the night. July, she will fly and give no warning to her flight. August, die she must. The autumn winds blow chilly and cold. September, a loved once knew has now
That is just such a clever, smart, beautiful song. So perfectly ties the natural arc of young love through the seasons, from spring to fall, the birth of the relationship to the end of the relationship in the fall. And when I was a young kid and dating, that this song really resonated with me, and it's one I sing to my own kid now.
Oh, man, yeah. Make us cry.
And, you know, and I was thinking as I was listening to this, I thought, how is my kid gonna discover my record collection when it's all on a hard drive? Gonna have to think about this.
Yeah, this is an issue.
Because I don't, you know, you want it out there so he, you know, he finds it and sort of comes to it on his own. You don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, I have both going on in my household. I've got the digital collection, which my son has all of. So he's got all, you know, 25,000-30,000 songs, right? But then there's records in my closet, 1,000 of those. There's, you know, a couple thousand CDs around the house. So I think he's going to find great stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. No, but right. I have to say that I'm really envious, because your family had taste in music that you could carry at least, you know, some good taste in music you can carry with you. The music in my household was show tunes, which I can't stand to this day.
And see, I like show tunes, and I heard a lot of that.
Makes
too.
Me nuts. And then the house was filled with Barbara Streisand, cannot deal with, and lots of music from that era. I mean, even Sinatra, who I appreciate, I heard so much of. I can't listen to. So when I think of my parents' record collection, this is probably the best I could do.
And now I'm on the right with a metronome and a very pretty girl.
So,
metronome. I'll wind it up.
As she winds the metronome and walks to the other side, I'm going to tell you this story. In about 1965 or so, 1966, my father went out and bought a stereo. I mean, a really great, I mean, to say it's a tube amp, everything was tube amp, so it's not that exotic, but it was a really amazing stereo. And so one of the things he had in his collection was this record, which was a stereo checkout record. It made, you balanced your speakers. You made sure the bass was right. I loved this stuff. This was like the first time I found my...
I and the metronome are on the left.
I love her. And if we could have met, we could have had a great relationship. But my inner geek was discovered in my parents' record collection when my dad got this stereo. First of all, to hear the full fidelity of music. Up until that moment that my dad got this amazing stereo, which incidentally, I looked up and it cost about $350 back then. It's an H.H. Scott amplifier, which I did a conversion in money, was about $2,500, right? So he buys this $2,500, what we think of, stereo, and I listen to my music on it. And up until that, this, I'm holding in my hand, this is how I listen to all of my music.
Well, it's a little Westinghouse transistor radio. It's about the size of a pack of cigarettes, and it's definitely mono with one little speaker. And I
live with that under my
was
pillow.
Was this AM only?
I carried it around and held it up to my ear when I walked around. You know, people think of holding your handheld devices. That's what people did. They held it up to their ear when they walked down. Well, people. That's what I did and friends did when we walked down the street to hear music all the time.
What's one great song you heard coming out of this?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I can remember, like, I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Yeah,
right?
That's awesome.
That would totally
be. Yeah, that's cool.
So from the transistor radio from this little Westinghouse that I dearly, dearly love, which I got, by the way, from a coupon from a bottle of Listerine and plus $5. from that, I went to hearing this amazing music on a real stereo, and I think that in my parents' record collection, that record, that stereo checkout record, gave me a bit of my sense of humor and also gave me an appreciation for sound, which I completely carry to this day. So
yeah.
Mom and Dad, although my dad had a great love for Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller, wasn't much of that in the collection, but thank you so much for giving me the life I have and the appreciation I have.
Terrible, isn't it? Well, there's only one thing you can do with a piano like that. Shove it out the window. Hello. By Jove, they're doing it. Look out.
I would have totally listened to this.
Awesome, right?
You must have just thought, wow.
Oh, my gosh. And then, of course, back then there were the train records and all those sorts of things for the hi-fi nuts. Anyway, I loved all of that stuff. So this series is about the records that in your parents' record collection that gave you insight to your parents, or gave you your own identity, or you, something you carry along with us. And Alison McAdam is the sort of the creator of this series, the one who's came up with the idea. She came to us with this idea. And so we're tossing it out to you as listeners to write stories on our blog. And Alison McAdam is with us now from All Things Considered.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you've been gathering stories from some well-known people, and as well from all sorts of people getting stories. And since we haven't played much music, why don't you get us right to a piece of music, and we'll expand on this idea.
Okay. So I'll start with a story that we've recorded. It hasn't aired yet on All Things Considered. It will this summer. We decided it would be fun to talk with Colin Molloy from the Decembrists and his sister, Miley Molloy, who's a fiction writer. She's a great writer. Together. And they came to us with a fabulous story. It's a story that takes place in the summer of 1981. Their parents have just gotten divorced. They're just little kids. I think partly in an effort to deal with this disruption in their lives. Their mom takes them on a road trip in a VW Rabbit from Montana to Martha's Vineyard. And they only have 4 tapes in the car.
Cassettes, of course.
Yes. So they got really, really used to this very small amount of music. And they each brought one song that they remembered from this trip.
Oh, my God.
I know how you feel about this song.
Yeah, I can't stand the Eagles or this song. Sorry, Colin. But you know what? Right now, this sounds pretty good.
I actually
loved
it. I
think without the baggage of the time.
But I should also stress to you, Colin didn't pick this.
Okay. You're going to tell us more then.
Well, just to say, Colin didn't pick this song because he loves it. That's part
I see. Ah. Oh. And
that's true. You know, you make connections to music that you might otherwise not love, but you find it at the right time in your life, especially when you're a kid, from your parents. It can make all the difference. When I was a kid in high school, we had high school dances. We prayed they'd play one of 2 songs, either this one or Stairway to Heaven.
All right, well, let's listen to Hotel California, and we'll come back and hear the story.
On a dark desert highway, cool wind in my hair, warm smell of colitas rising.
Such a great line, some dance to remember, some dance to forget. Okay, I'm getting to like this song. This is huge for me. You have no idea, Alison. So I'm glad you're playing this, but at the time, tell us, you said that Colin Molloy didn't necessarily play this song, Forrest picked this song because of his love for the song.
Yeah, let's remember these were like pretty sad kids who'd just gone through a really tough time. They were kind of captive in this car with this music. And so I'll play a little of the tape that he... a little of the story that he told us about, you know, being, he's like 5 or 6, and his understanding of those lyrics. So, yeah, if you just want to hit that
I think anybody of my age, you know, in their 30s who grew up in the 70s and who had parents who liked the Eagles, I think has a kind of a relationship with that song, because it's this kind of weird, you know, kind of long, mysterious, minor key odyssey about Don Henley, you know, driving through the desert and discovering this mysterious hotel and staying there and getting, I assumed, stuck there for forever. I took it very literally. So, you know, it was just him driving along and finding this hotel. He called for wine, but they couldn't bring him wine, but they did have pink champagne for some reason. And imagining pretty boys, you know, dancing in a courtyard and all these things. And particularly the line about, you know, they gather for the feast and they stab it with their steely knives, but they can't kill the beast. You know, that's obviously meant something to Don Henley that was very deep. But to me, it was just a bunch of people like stabbing some carcass in the middle of a banquet table. Very evocative. I understand now a little bit more what Don Henley was talking about, though I think it's less cool the way that you understand it as an adult.
So that's Colin Malloy talking about Hotel California. And in case you were wondering, the other albums they had in that car were The Muppet Movie. And
of course,
John Lennon and Yoko Ono's Double Fantasy.
Wow.
And then they couldn't remember the fourth. None of them could remember.
We could have a contest.
Guess the remaining cassette. Yeah.
I'm going to go with Rumors, Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, that's a good guess.
Let's ask him next time we see him. And the thing that points out, too, which I love about this series, is that when you hear something as a kid, you take it one way, and as you grow, you see it another. And I think that's the beauty of this series. And you must be seeing this on All Things Considered in submissions that you're getting and the way you're reaching out.
One of the points of the series is not just for people to talk about music or their favorite song or something that shaped their musical sensibilities, but it might be a song, just like Colin and Miley Malloy's story, it might be a song that just connect to a time in your life, and you can never disconnect that time in your life from that music, or something you learned about a parent. And so it really is a story about family and life and identity formation. And
so did that happen for you?
So I actually had a hard time thinking of, despite having come up with the series, I didn't realize I didn't really have a story, but I did think of one, and I think it's part of that theme of this very much not being necessarily about music you love. This is actually music that, as a 7 or 8 year old, I really, really hated. Mm-hmm. But really, it's a story about my dad. So I have to give you a little bit of background.
Oh.
My dad is a physicist. He's a really cerebral guy. He's also, like a lot of physicists, a musician as well. I think there's something about notes and physics that mm-hmm. go together. And we lived in Denmark when I was about 6, and when we came back to Kentucky, where I grew up, my dad got really interested in some Danish music by the composer Carl Nielsen. And he found this lady who was also interested in this music. They decided that they were going to do some performances of this. She was going to accompany my father while he sang.
Wow.
And so why don't I give you a taste of the music? Good. And just think about being a 7-year-old kid hanging out in a relatively small house with your dad at the piano with some random lady singing this music.
Fantastic.
So that is Emelin Rose in Danish. And my dad is a good singer, but he's not a singer like that.
Uh-huh.
And we just thought this was so weird and would sort of go running to our rooms to hide. And
Dad's doing that thing again.
Yeah. And I think I also just thought, you know, who is this weird lady and what is this weird thing that my dad does? And he was so into it. And I think that the reason I thought of this as a story that fits the series really is not because of the music, because no, I don't like this music, but because of what it taught me about my dad, or what it symbolizes about my dad, that he is such a pursuer of hobbies that have no, he doesn't care if anyone likes what he's doing or is interested. He sings shape notes. He does, nice. You know, he just does things that, because they make him happy. And I can appreciate that now. And I couldn't then. And it's something that I still haven't mastered, you know, pursuing hobbies and being so sort of unifocused on things, whether or not anybody else around me cares.
It's somewhat being comfortable in your skin, isn't it? It's that idea that you're not out to please anyone. First please yourself, and then the world just opens up.
Yeah, and there's just no harm. If you want to go sing Danish music, like, cool, go for it. That's great. It makes him happy. There was music playing around the house, and, you know, now I have this somewhere buried in my background.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I love this.
That's my story.
And I love this story, Allison. Allison McAdam from All Things Considered. How often will we get to hear these? Where can we find these?
So we're going to be airing these once a week, or maybe more than that, depending on how many stories we also get from listeners.
If someone wanted to send All Things Considered a story, what are you looking for, and how do they do it?
So we're looking for stories about one song. All you have to do to send the story is go to npr.org, go to the bottom of the page where it says Contact Us, click on that, and then make sure you put Parents Music in your subject line.
Excellent. Allison McAdam from All Things Considered. Thank you. Thank you for the series, and thanks for the stories.
Thanks for having me.
So let's do this. Let's get, Robin Hilton, let's get to one of those listener stories.
Yeah, this one's from a guy named Larry. He says, growing up, I recall that my dad had a dusty box of 78s. Like a lot of his generation who fought in World War II, he worked hard at his job and at home. Free time was limited. When he did have time to spare, it was usually spent with us kids. The 78s rarely left the box. Then, somewhere in the 1960s, Dad shelled out big bucks to get a Radio Shack stereo. It was an unusual indulgence. Then he did something truly astounding. He bought new record albums. One was by a guy with the oddest name I'd ever heard, Thelonious Monk.
Oh, my gosh, that's fantastic.
I never thought of that as an odd name, but I guess
seriously,
so.
Yeah, growing up in Kansas, you had lots of friends named Thelonious and last names Monk going.
Larry goes on to say that on that album was a song called Lulu's Back in Town. I could not figure out what Dad heard in it, as this Monk guy was hitting bunches and bunches of wrong notes.
Of course.
And in the background, you could hear Monk mumbling along. After a while, I began to hear that the wrong notes strangely fit together, and it wasn't boring. Think Perry Como, like the music of other quote-unquote old folks. Mm-hmm. So Monk and Lulu gave...
Who were probably 32.
Right at the time. And then Larry says, so Monk and Lulu gave me a first glimpse of music beyond kids' songs and rock and roll. I like to think I still have eclectic tastes in music, and those dusty old 78s turned out to be Fats Waller, Louis Armstrong, Bunny Berrigan, and the like. Who knew that my responsible Midwestern dad... deep down, was kind of hip. Let's listen to Thelonious Monk, Lulu's Back in Town.
Awesome. Thank you. Let's moan around.
Yeah.
Let's moan along with Thelonious.
Yeah. What a great story, Larry. Thanks for sharing that. And the song, too.
Nice. So we got the story from Valerie, and she tells a story. I don't know if you know this artist or not, but we'll get there. I was lucky enough to have parents who loved every kind of music and possessed a vast library of vinyl, which I covet to this day, from Fouad Hassan and his Bedouin Bandits to Duane Eddy and everything in between. But what really wrenched my attention as a child in the 1960s were the recordings of the legendary Peruvian vocalist Ima Sumac. You know Ima Sumac?
I don't know Ima Sumac.
Oh my God, you're about to experience something wonderful. Her seemingly impossible, almost inaudible high notes to her growling bass were mesmerizing to me as a four-year-old child. I'd watch the record spinning around with the album cover propped up in front of me, dreaming of the Peruvian jungle and admiring her fabulous gold jewelry. My parents introduced me to Marian Anderson as well, and her version of Deep River is still chill-inducing to me to this day. I will always be sincerely grateful to my parents for passing along their love of music to me. These notes wafting out of the speakers painted pictures of imaginary worlds in my mind and open up vistas to places that are still influencing me today. I look at my own eclectic record collection and smile, knowing that it all started with Mom and Dad.
Wow.
So she mentions a couple of artists here, but Ima Sumac, there was a whole period in the 60s that was sort of this exoticism and the tiki bar stuff you know, love for what they called Oriental culture then, you know, Asian culture, really crept into American culture. A lot of the clean design and furniture and stuff came from Asia and stuff. And anyway, Ima Sumac was this woman, I'd say probably the first world music record I ever listened to.
Oh, well, we got to hear some.
We just got to play some Ima Sumac. Let me see what I have in my library of Ima. I know I have our records at home. So, oh, here's something. I've got a record called Mambo, which is, and look at this picture of Ima Sumac, right?
It's tribal.
And very erotic and exotic, right? Wouldn't you say?
For the time, sure.
Absolutely. So let's see what it sounds like. There's nothing new under the sun.
The kids actually still listen to stuff like this today. They call it lounge music, and they buy it and listen to it ironically. But that is amazing.
Yeah. Ima is spelled Y-M-A, if you were trying to find her name. S-U-M-A-C is her last name.
She died just a few years ago in 2008. She was 86.
Yep. Changed the way I listen to music in many ways, even though, you know, it wasn't something I put on all the time. But it was someone who influenced me, certainly influenced Valerie. Thanks for that story.
You know what? I mentioned kids today. We've got to talk to the kid of today that we have with us, our intern, Dan Raby.
Who we're chaining to a desk in his last week. He doesn't
we
yet know that.
We keep saying it's his last week. And then
we're going to miss him terribly.
Find a way to keep him. But I got to know. Dan, I have to say, when you started, I immediately realized that you know so much about so many artists that I would never in a million years have guessed that someone your age would know and love. So I assumed that you must have gotten some great stuff from your parents.
That's all thanks to my dad. He's always been the one that's been passing me records saying, you need to listen to this, you need to listen to this, here's a cassette tape, here's an album.
Wow,
that's great.
My mom hated music. Well, her favorite song is LMFAO right now, so we'll push her to the side. She's great. Love her. But I remember on a long car ride, I'm probably 13, my dad pulls out of nowhere this one CD and says, you're old enough to listen to this now.
What could that be?
That was Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention. We're only in it for the money. Oh,
nice, Dad.
So
next time I see your dad, I'm shaking his hand again.
It was for like 4 hours. It was just my mind being blown by this music, trapped in this car, just not understanding what's going on at all. It's basically the 60s shrunk into a road trip.
It really is. And my memory of that record is I used to be a dishwasher at a camp, and we used to sing all of the songs on that record as we washed dishes. So
that's amazing. Well, we got to hear something. What do you want to play?
Ooh, can we play Concentration Moon?
Excellent.
How did it start? Thousands of creeps killed in the park. American way, try and explain. The scab of a nation driven insane.
Go by, gotta go by, suddenly die.
Cop kill a creep! Pow, pow, pow!
Got the memories.
How old were you when he played that for you?
13, I think.
Wow, yeah.
I heard it when I was 14, I guess.
I can't remember the record I had, but my first Frank Zappa I had on a little reel-to-reel that I got at someone's garage sale.
Wow.
It had...
Oh, and your dad was big into reel-to-reel stuff, recording all the time.
Well, he was a real audio sort of geek. He was always making...
Is that true of all of our fathers?
Would
that
be... Maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
He was very early adopter for CDs. I remember when he got CDs at maybe 81 or 2 or 3 or 4. I remember very early on. And I brought some of my friends over from school to listen to what a compact disc sounded like. But Frank said it had Jammin' in Joe's Garage on it, the Real Real. Oh, yeah. That's the only song I remember from it. That's great. Let's hear one more story from listeners that we got on the All Songs Considered blog. This one's from Lynn, who writes, "My father's voluminous collection of classical and jazz recordings formed the continuous soundtrack of my childhood. Wagner, Bessie Smith, and traditional New Orleans music were his obsessions and informed many of his interests and pursuits as an adult. To his despair, my musical taste bolted in the opposite direction at the first opportunity. However, we did share a passion for the one rock album in his collection." Janis Joplin's Greatest Hits.
That fits with Bessie.
The recording was on reel-to-reel, reel-to-reel, which meant I was able to gleefully bear witness to the ritual of cursing and knob fiddling that were part and parcel of winding the tape.
So when is reel-to-reel going to be the new vinyl?
New vinyl. What a pain. Reel-to-reel was such a pain, though. The music would begin, and my dad would start nodding his head, tapping his foot, and enthusiastically yelling, "Go, man!" When Janis got really geared up, he would begin to dance a sort of crazy jig while holding our howling chihuahua under one arm.
No.
Dog number two would begin jumping and barking in unison while the peanut gallery, my brother, and the less adventuresome pets... How many pets did they have? And the less adventuresome pets would hunker down and glare at the ensuing chaos. This was my cue to join in. I would whirl myself around in an arm-flailing frenzy that only the very young or very athletic could manage, whooping and stomping my feet to the beat of a wild piano. The fun never, ever lasted long enough. The novelty, the rule-breaking, and the uncontrolled energy were obvious kid catnip, but the more fundamental attraction was the power that one voice had to transform my father's behavior, to launch an emotional tidal wave so raw and overpowering it would make an otherwise sober, organic chemist want to stand up and dance. And that's so true of the music I heard my dad listen to. It took him into places I didn't normally see my parents, you know? So she goes on to say, my tastes have come back around after years of stuffing myself with pop tunes, a pale imitation of the unadorned, authentic, and emotionally charged music I grew up listening to. It's possible that my father pulled a sort of bait and switch, following my mother's lead as she fooled us into eating vegetables by hiding them in foods we loved. My dad hid the roots of blues under the more palatable crust of rock and roll. Whatever the motivation, Janis Joplin's music will always fill me with a visceral sense of joy and connection to my dad, and it will always make me dance. What on earth should we play from Janis Joplin?
Oh, I think "Peace of My Heart." That's the one that's gonna. That's the one that's gonna get dad dancing.
Yeah, right? That's great. Yeah. Awesome.
All right,
yeah.
That's great. So, if people want to tell their stories,
go to the All Songs Considered blog. We have a post up there. You can also record your story if you want to go to our SoundCloud page, and you can either upload a recording you already have of yourself telling the story, or record directly into your computer. It's soundcloud.com/AllSongsConsidered.
We may have to do a part two of this. We'll see.
Yeah. So tell us your story, share your memories, and we'll come back to this. We'll revisit this throughout the summer.
And a lot of stuff going on this summer. Regina Spektor's concert, which happened at Le Poisson Rouge, be online by the time the show goes up. We have a show coming up on the best of the year so far. It's halfway through the year, and we're going to want you to vote.
Yeah, no. How does that happen?
Six months
in already.
We'll put up a poll, and then we'll do a show based around that. We'll do a show of all new releases coming up in all of the summer.
Summer
that
preview, coming up. Best so far, yeah. Listener picks for the best so far. Lots of great music coming up.
Awesome. Janis Joplin, thanks, Robin.
Thank you, Bob.
And Dan.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Robin.
We'll miss you.
Aww.
For NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered.
The music you've just heard was played by instruments which demand considerable care in recording, because their sounds extend from the very lowest frequency to the very highest.